Doherty, thank you so much for coming on to the Hear Us Out podcast to tell us about your experience as a Broadway singer and now movie singer. So tell us a little bit about first how you got to Broadway and a little bit about yourself, your musical career.
The journey to Broadway was long. I started actually working as an actress when I was a kid. I was doing regional productions of musical theater shows, and I was doing like local commercials and things like that. I come from a family of arts educators. So my mom is a voice teacher. My dad is an acting teacher. And they also ran the education department at a community art center. And so I started performing as a kid. And then I went to and actually auditioned for my first Broadway show when I was a kid. I was like 11 or so. And I auditioned for a show that never made it to Broadway called Whistle Down the Wind, which was written by Andrew Lloyd Webber. And then I sort of after that, it was a lot of hectic driving back and forth. So I decided I'm just going to be a kid. And so I went to high school like everybody else. And then I went to the Boston Conservatory of Music and studied theater and graduated from college and moved to New York. And I auditioned for Wicked for the first time in 2008. And absolutely nothing came of it. And, you know, life continued on. And I did some other productions and worked doing this and that and always was doing something artistic and creative. And then years and years later, a friend of mine who had started off as the second keyboard player on the road in the national tour of Wicked had worked his way up to become music director on Broadway. And he had always told me that I was right for this one track in the ensemble, which is Shen Shen, who also understudies Madame Morrible. And I just could never quite get my foot in the door. And then at this point, he was able to bring me in and they were looking for someone to do this role, to a replacement. And I went in and auditioned for the first time and they said, this is great. We'll put you in the file. And 6 months later, they brought me in again and I booked it that time. And that was, I started rehearsals in January of 2020 and made my Broadway, exactly, made my Broadway debut in February of 2020. So like, literally after 12 years of trying to book this show, I did 3 weeks of performances and then the entire world shut down.
Oh my God.
Very dramatic. And then but you know, with everything we can find silver linings. So as horrific as the pandemic was and traumatizing for everyone, if my timing had been different, I would not have been a part of the company that reopened Broadway, which honestly is one of the most magical things I've ever been a part of. And because of that, I got to perform on the Today Show. I got to perform in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. I got to do a ham for ham, which looking at my coloring, never would be invited to a ham for ham under different circumstances. Then I happened to be around when they were looking for someone who could sing soprano too and do the Morrible demo work when they were getting ready to start the movie. And I was in the right place at the right time. And I ended up laying down all the demo work for the movie and then got to be a part of the vocal ensemble as well.
How was that comparing being on set for the movie versus singing on stage on Broadway? How is that different for you as a performer? And do you feel any more either excitement, anxiety in one environment versus the other? Okay, we spoke with Simon Hayes about how he recorded the audio and the live singing and understanding the complexity that took. I'm really interested from your perspective, being one of the performers in that, how was that for you having both of those experiences, stage and set?
I think a lot of our anxiety comes from the unfamiliar. And so for me, I know that, first of all, singing an ensemble is great because if you have a little mistake or you crack or whatever, like it just keeps going. Mm-hmm. And even when you are singing a solo, if you crack, you just got to keep going. We can't have a meltdown over it. And I do think Idina Menzel one time made a comment where she was like, honestly, if I'm getting 80% of it right most of the time, that's a really good average. So
true.
We can't strive for perfection because you'll just never get up and do it otherwise. And so I'm very comfortable singing live, obviously, having done well over 1,000 performances of Wicked at this point. Wow. And but the anxiety in being in a studio, what makes it different is that when you're on stage there, you know, I end up singing for maybe like 30 minutes and I'm not even really singing. That's like the runtime of all the musical numbers that I am a part of where I sing is maybe 30 minutes versus being in a studio where you're there for 6 hours and that is what you're doing. You're singing. And granted, you're not singing the entirety of 6 hours, but you're singing and drilling things and you have to sort of go. You can't really mark, as they say on stage, like you can't mark the performance and kind of do a pulled back version of it because you have to find the energy and you have to work the cutoffs and the dynamics and all. And those are all things that you can only do if you're actually singing full out. So to have the vocal stamina to go through and tediously sing small phrases of each song, you're never singing the full song all in one go to see if it's a good take. Because there's too many opportunities with 24 singers in a room for someone to have one little mistake and then suddenly the whole thing wouldn't work. So you're just going through phrase by phrase and really working it until it's perfect. And they also expect you to be honest about whether you did something real weird. So so if you did something weird, then it's like, I'm so sorry, everyone. And four tenor ones and soprano ones, I'm so sorry, I did something weird. We need to go back and redo this. And until they hear it and it sounds perfect, and then you would go in and you would double that. So it's a much more tedious effort. And you have to like, but at the same time, you are in more comfortable clothes and you're not running up a flight of stairs or down a flight of stairs before singing any of this. And so it is different. But I definitely enjoyed it. And it takes a ton of stamina to be able to do something like that, like doing the demo work and also laying down the soundtrack.
You said you understudy Marble?
Yes.
So how is that for you? How much in advance do they tend to let you know that you're going on? And what is that prep work to like get in the mindset of my role is going to be very different tonight from what I expected it to be?
So it varies. I think the closest I've ever been notified that I would be going on is I would like maybe at around like 4:30 or 5 for a 7 o'clock show. And I'm very lucky that Morrible is, for me, it is not tremendously taxing. The hardest thing about it is that there's a lot of in the stage version, they really want some dramatic yelling that kind of can sit low. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I was the most stressed about was when I first started doing the show was if I ever had to go on for a matinee for Morrible and then had to go on for Shenshen in the evening, because I sing, my voice just has to sit so much higher for all of the Shenshen stuff. And if you're familiar with Wicked and the original Broadway cast recording, there is this line that someone sings in the opening of Act Two, and thank goodness, where she sings, like some terrible green blizzard throughout the land she flies. That is my solo, which I sing after running up and then down a flight of stairs. Thank you. And so to be in this very mature place where my voice sits very low and I have to like use a lot of growling for dramatic effect, whether it be the Wicked Witch speech at the right before Defying Gravity, or yelling at Glinda during Witch Hunters, or just any of that stuff, it sits so low. And I was very worried about being able to make that adjustment. Now, granted, it only happened, I think, twice that I've been there, that I've been on for a matinee as Morrible and then have been on for Shenshen. So it's not something that I have to worry about very often. And also that flies, good thing it's nice and short, so we can just get off it quickly if it's starting to be a problem.
You're our first Broadway person that we've spoken to, that there's so much live like breath control that you have to think about over the course? Because as you said, with the studio recording, you could take it as many times as they'll let you to get it perfect. But when it's live, you got to get it right on the first take. Is there ever a time where you want to take the creative liberty, I'll call it, to sing a little bit differently than you normally do, just to kind of see what'll happen? Or do you have to stay exactly as planned with each show?
When you are someone that does a lot of live performing, you will understand that inevitably there is going to be fluctuations and things. It's a living and breathing thing that's going to change. Now, being an actor first more than a musician, everything I do, because musical theater is a genre of theater, which means that the acting and the storytelling is the most important, everything needs to be derived from that. And so if it is character driven and I'm feeling a little being able to make interesting different choices with character choices, I absolutely feel at liberty. But also part of being in an ensemble is knowing what our role is. And we are there to exist as a unit to help tell the story and to help lift up either the soloist in certain moments or the lead vocalist. And that means that I am a cog in a big machine, and I don't get to just do something different today, because then the machine's not going to work the same way. And so I also know that I don't really have those kinds of impulses because of the fact that everything is character driven. So that helps keep me in track. And I'm never thinking like, I want to sing differently today. I want to, like, then I do that outside. I will find a thing. I sing at home. I will explore that because it doesn't suit what my job is as an actor in Wicked, if that makes sense.
It sounds to me like if you try something different, then maybe you're deviating from who that character is, and that's not the intent of the performance. What does it mean to prepare, to have vocal stamina, to be able to run the steps and run back down while you're singing or just leading into singing? What do you do to physically be ready to do that, to be capable and ready?
Yeah, it's a lot of, the thing about being, there's a lot of people who maybe come from Hollywood or other lines of creative professions that when they come and do a Broadway show, sort of have this understanding that like, yeah, sure, maybe the runtime of your show is only like 2 to 3 hours in the evening, 3.5 if you have with your half hour call and whatever. But the thing that you recognize is that when you're doing that 8 times a week, the rest of your life becomes about preparing to be able to do that 8 times a week. And my life is a lot about getting up and hydrating, making sure that I am feeding myself properly, knowing that if I'm feeling a little vocally tired, then maybe I need to stay away from certain foods that are going to cause more vocal fatigue, getting up and like nebulizing before every single show, having little pastilles and things hidden around the spots in the theater, having my Grethers before each act starts, and doing like singing straw exercises to help myself warm up, and just in general, being in tune with where my instrument is at every day, because that also has fluctuations. So if my voice is sitting a little bit lower, like that's fine, but that means that we need to take a little bit of time and explore all of that. And if that means, you know, drinking some warm water or hot water with lemon and or tea, or doing the like little things that I've learned in my years of being alive and being a professional singer. And also,
la vida no se detiene cuando te enfermas. Las vacunas contra las enfermedades respiratorias pueden protegerte para que juegues con tu compañero fiel. Según tu edad y tu salud, podrían recomendarte vacunas contra la gripe, el COVID-19, el VRS o la infección neumocócica. Vacunarte puede ayudarte a seguir en el juego. Infórmate en cdeep.org/es/vacunas-protegen. Presentado por The American Lung Association y CBIP, combatiendo enfermedades respiratorias infecciosas.
So understanding that what I was capable of doing in my 20s and even my early and even my 30s of like just getting up and being able to be like, here we go, just scream and call it good is not where I'm at. And I want to be able to sing the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I have to take very good care of this instrument. It's the only one I have. So
it's a whole other layer of body regulation. Like the rest of us also, we think we're doing body regulation and then there's you.
It's crazy. And I, you know, and I'm, if anyone has ever found like our current Elphaba right now, Mary Kate Morrissey has like video diaries on her different social media platforms where she talks about her vocal routine because she has to be so dedicated to be able to do and get up and sing the show every night. And it's so inspiring as well to like meet other people who are striving to really just become better and level up with not only like their career and each performance, but just like with themselves as artists and craftsmen. And so to be able to be surrounded by people like that and learn different tricks of the trade and be inspired to really care for yourself is just also incredibly motivational because you see the way that lots of people do it and you start to learn as well. Because when you're young, you're just sort of like, oh, well, that person's just gifted or that person is this. And I can't believe you do all of this and you can just do it. And you start to realize, no, there's like way more that goes into being able to care for your body this way. And seeing what the dancers in our show have to do to care for their bodies, like they're all constantly doing like physical therapy exercises. Mm-hmm. And I myself have learned that I have to do these physical therapy exercises as well so that I can manage to run up the stairs and like have breath support to be able to sing the notes. Because that's what they brought me in for is my big foghorn voice. So.
Yeah, and it's the preparation that's not seen. People see the performance, they hear the songs, but mm-hmm. they don't see that your entire day, you have a performance tonight, your entire day is going to be built around those few hours and leading into that. And probably, I would assume that as soon as it's over, thought goes toward the next performance and being ready to do it again. We've had conversations with stage musicians and sound engineers, and there's always a component of the conversation is how some nights are just like, it's just another show. And some nights you're feeling it, some nights you're not, but you have to be on and you want to be on for your audience. And people don't see that struggle. They see the success of, hey, you've made it to Broadway and you have this role, but talk a little bit about the struggle of maybe walking out on stage and not feeling at your peak performance and how you as a professional manage that for yourself.
Sure. It happens all the time. You know, when you, especially it's not like we have an off season. We like Broadway is always happening. And especially when you're in a long running show, which for a lot of us, is you're like, this is a blessing to have this security of being able to go to a job constantly. And so there's a ton of gratitude that goes into it, which I think really, really helps. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the like rundown is inevitable because you're performing 8 shows a week and for 52 weeks and you get 2 weeks off in a year, unless you're taking a leave of absence to go do something else. And so first of all, it's the being okay with sometimes not feeling your best and being like, all right, so how do we manage this today? And learning the extra little things that you can do, the places where you can pull back and maybe not be going what I would call as full out, and knowing that my like 75% of the way to full out is still enough mm-hmm. for today, because I'm not feeling well. And I know that I have to keep doing this, or, you know, or I'm coming back from being sick. And I know that I've taken enough time, and you don't have the luxury of like just taking as long as you want to heal from being under the weather, whether it be because you're like, I don't have any sick days anymore, or if you're like, well, my cousin is coming to the show and they flew across country and spent thousands of dollars to be here. I got to figure this out. And so that's always a part of it. And learning all those cues from inside of your body. But then also, I'm also so grateful that I am at a show that you can use every single one of those feelings, that I go to work and I am genuinely friends with most of the people that I'm on stage with. And so I get to go out there and play every night. And yes, maybe my body hurts, or yes, maybe I didn't get enough rest or whatever, but like, there's always something that will make it fun. And it is also that mindset of like, all right, someone out there has never seen this show before. Someone out there has never seen a Broadway show before. And then also extra pressure I put on myself. I am the only plus size person on this stage. Mm-hmm. And I need to bring it every single time I'm out there, because I need to show people that someone with a larger body is capable of not only like doing all of this, but doing it exceptionally. And that is so important to me, because I know that I am my work ethic. And so if I made the decision to show up and do this today and I didn't call out, then I need to do the best that I can. I need to find it. And whether it means playing music that's going to get me in a good spirit, whether it means I'm really going to like scream at the witch and do all of those things to get those feelings out, then that means that that's finding a way of doing that. I'm so grateful that we really get to like exercise like rage and anger in the show, because it helps when you're not in a good headspace to be able to kind of exercise that out. And I know so many of my other fellow performers and castmates have had that same experience of whether they're like going through a breakup or, you know, dealing with loss or whatever. And you still come in and get to throw your whole heart and your passion for doing this and learn of what you're going through, throw it into the performance, because it's a better way of exercising those feelings out of you.
Absolutely. And I feel like the theater is a way for people just feel a connection to the characters, almost in a way that it's so different from watching a movie, because maybe it's because they're seeing you live in person that they can connect. So you talked about being the only plus size person on stage. I can imagine you being that example, that role model for so many people that are sitting in the audience that, hey, she can do it, I can do it.
Absolutely.
Even if it's not acting.
Yes. And I've gotten so many messages from people over the years of my time of being at Wicked, where it's like, I didn't ever pursue this because I didn't think there was a place for me looking the way that I do. So to see someone who looks this way up there doing this and dancing and running around in heavy costumes and doing all of these things is so inspiring. And, you know, and that's the thing, is like, quite frankly, the reality is that most of America looks more like me than the like really long and lean, beautiful dancers. And so it's so important to me to just be that example, especially since I didn't really have that example for myself. And it was a long time that I had to like work through those feelings of like, is there a place for me in this industry? And I love it so much, and I don't want to do anything else. And quite frankly, I'm pretty mediocre at everything else. Like, this is the thing that I am the best at. And so it's where my heart absolutely is. And I needed to find a way of working through all of that and then finding the inspiration to get up and do it every day, even though I'm 40 and even though it's hard.
You were talking before about when you may not be feeling in a great headspace and you can bring that into the performance. Does the performance feel more authentic for you when maybe you have one of those moments of you're not feeling good that day, and then you get to yell within the course of your performance? Is there any different feeling in that for you in that moment, or is it just a different way of performing the role?
I think it can be both. Like sometimes it helps and it helps you get out of the funk to know that you're really locked in and you're using those emotions. And you're like harnessing them, I would say rather, and putting them into the performance. And then because it starts to feel like you're really hitting your stride or you're in your groove, it's like, oh, now I'm finding joy, because now all of a sudden, because this is feeling like a really good show that I'm doing, I now am feeling lighter and now I can find energy to jump and to be silly and to do all these things that I was maybe having a harder time with when I ran out. But then I screamed, "Good news, she's dead." And so that's, you know, and there's just these things that you can do to work through all of that and experience has taught me that with the right headspace and the right mental tools and tricks that we can kind of work our way through just about anything if I've made the decision to walk through the door that day and show up to work.
Mm-hmm. Now, I watched way back when in like 2008, they had the TV show Legally Blonde: Search for the New Elle Woods, where they were looking for the replacement to play Elle on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And it was just different exercises or challenges each week to weed out the contestants. And one of the episodes was dedicated to, you're with the actors on stage and somebody forgets their lines or does the wrong choreography or does something that is not on script. And what do you do now? So does that ever happen? And if so, what happens when something goes off script and there's so many actors on stage during Wicked?
Oh, yes. And it does, inevitably. You know, we have people of varying ages that are on stage. I mean, one time, one of our memorables, bless her heart, she was a consummate professional. She had played the role on the road for years. So it's not a you don't know what you're doing. It's just like a little lapse in what's happening. She had gotten like, I think, a COVID booster shot. And then there's this expression that we use on Broadway called going to the white room, where you literally are like, I got nothing. Like nothing is happening. I'm in a white room. There's no clues as to where I am in time and space. And she was in the middle of singing when this happened to her, because there's this moment for memorables in Thank Goodness where she has this line that says, then with a jealous squeal, the wicked witch burst from concealment. But the way that it's musically written is that squeal ends up being really big. And if you put a little too much into the squeal, it's really easy to forget where the rest of that phrase goes. And she fully just said a bunch of nonsense words afterwards. She was like, squeal! I mean, it fully was nonsense. She kept going and just words that were not of the English language came out of her mouth. And the best part about it is like, it's a moment where the entire ensemble is staring at her. So she was looking at us all individually in the eye while she sang full-blown gibberish. And then it was like, well, good luck everyone who has a little solo moment after this, because people were laughing so hard because it happens. We had something go wrong with like the lighting system. Was just something, there was a bug in it, and then suddenly there was like, we were in no lights, and then it was like
wrong lights. And you just keep going, even though we're all singing in the dark to each other. So like, just stuff happens and you have to just kind of like keep going. And also the other thing is like, it is crazy to see what muscle memory will do. Like when things are wrong, you will just keep going. Mm-hmm. We've had incidences where we had the man who was conducting had like a blood sugar incident and he went down and people just kind of kept going. And there was no one conducting. How can you have a musical number happening when no one's conducting? I don't know what that sounded like, but it was so nuts to just see the way that everybody's muscle memory just kept kicked in and everyone kept going. So it absolutely does happen and you have to be okay with that. And also the other thing is like, there are swings that go on. So a swing is someone who understudies all of the ensemble parts. Mm-hmm. And so we have swings that know 10 different ensemble tracks.
Wow.
In each the male presenting and the female presenting ensemble. And then we have some singer swings that know like 6 different roles. Mm-hmm. And you go on for a bunch of different things in a week, if something might get a little crossed, you grab the wrong suitcase, or suddenly you just thought you did something slightly different, and then they thought they were in a different track because they accidentally did a different physical cue, and then they're clicked in, and now they think they're you, but you're there, and you're like, well, right. We both can't be here. So, you know, and it's just about being conscientious enough to like not hurt anybody, but it's like it's bound to happen in something that happens as often when we have people going on. You know, it's going to happen at some point.
As an audience member, when those things become detectable, I see that oftentimes as an opportunity for something fun to happen, that whether it's a live performance of theater, whether it's a concert, mm-hmm. that the singer forgets the lines, whatever it may be, it can create these interesting moments of how do you fill that in? How does the idea of singing the gibberish, it's partly, wow, how did that happen? But also partly it's kind of brilliant. Just... Mm-hmm. Make noises until you find where you're supposed to be.
It's like unintentionally breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh wait, we are real people and we're human and things go wrong. And
mm-hmm.
I wonder if
sometimes
the oh no aspect of that gets overplayed. That to me, there's a degree of professionalism in working through that. You may not want it to happen, but when it does, that you figure out what to do, you figure it out. And there's something professional in that to me.
Oh, sure. And also I think sometimes, you know, I think sometimes the audience gets really delighted when they see something that is
unique.
Strange. Yeah. And I mean, I also think a lot of the time the audience, because there's like a suspension of disbelief anyway, that they're just along for the ride and people don't realize that certain things happen that are a mm-hmm. mistake. Mm-hmm. So we have, and then occasionally you'll get people who really do understand that can't be what was meant to happen. And we one time had, so in one short day, if you've seen the show, there are these like three big giant guys that come out that are like kind of like a mascot type character. And there are these characters from the original Frank Baum book. And when, oh Lord, God bless Colby, who was in the flat, he was in the center flathead, and their heads shoot up for a moment and then swing around, and then the pole is supposed to come back down. And something that can happen sometimes is that when the head comes back down and the pole in the internal mechanism is coming back down, it will rotate, which means that the head is then facing towards the back, which means they can't see. And so he is a former dance captain. He's been in and out of the show as a vacation swing for like years and years and years, so he's extremely experienced. And I'm just so grateful it didn't happen to someone who is brand new. But that happened to him, and then he couldn't find his way off stage. And so we were doing the rest of one short day. The other flatheads have left and gone. And then there was just one rogue flathead running back and forth with his head on backwards. And he was there for so long. And finally, some people were able to like kind of grab him and like hold on to him until he was able to figure out. But like that number ended and you could absolutely hear people in the audience like applauding more because they understood something very crazy. Just they witnessed it happening, and so they were like cheering and there it like that's the thing is like you just have to find a way, because the show is a big giant machine. It's gonna keep moving. There's too many people to stop and have you figure out where you are, unless it's like in a scene, and then maybe your scene partner will help you in dialogue. But for the most part, it will keep going. And to see the professionalism of people just sort of like, all right, we're gonna keep, we have this, this is, I'm either going to roll with it or I'm going to get run over by it. Right. And so it's one or the other. Mm-hmm. The set pieces are automated and there's 25 people on stage. So, you know, you have to be okay. And you have to be okay with like whatever those mistakes are and just kind of like laughing it off and then keep going, you know.
This might be a silly question. I have no idea. Do you wear any sort of earpiece in your ears while you're doing that? You're just totally your ears.
It's just our ears. We will have monitors that are fed back to us on stage, but we don't have any in ears. Most Broadway shows are that way. I know that it's Sick, the musical. They have in ears because that band is like right on stage with them. But no, most shows, it's just like a monitor system, which then is really fun because it's not mixed for us, mm-hmm. which means if there's like a sub drummer who's cranked their monitor up, you're like, yes, all right, I'm at a rock concert today. Or randomly like the guitar will be really loud or the bass, or it's just, yeah, every once in a while, something fun will happen. And that's also very exciting.
Where are the monitors oriented on stage?
Honestly, I know that we have a couple that are like back way at the back of the theater, by the crossover. Mm-hmm. And then there are some that are just kind of like in the wings facing us, but I'm not even sure where those are. I just know that they vaguely are up there mm-hmm. somewhere. I think they're probably on one of the like lighting towers that is there.
Are you listening in to the orchestra playing for your cues of when you need to be on?
It's both. It's that. And then also we have a conductor, and then we also have monitors for the conductor as well that are both in the house so that you can see them in case you're looking in a position where you can't see the conductor. Or also we have some that are backstage because there's several moments where there's either like offstage singers mm-hmm. who are contributing to the ends of numbers that have lots of dancers. Or there are moments where like the melting where we're all offstage singing.
So you had mentioned earlier when we were talking about how you started on Broadway right before COVID hit and how that being on stage, that first show when you came back, I'd like to hear about the emotion of walking into the theater that day when it started up again, walking back onto stage in front of an audience who has likely been itching to get out and do something, but also at the same time, seeing that that audience is not full because there's the spacing in the seats and whatever else they did to accommodate whatever needed to be done at the time, and what that was, and also how that relates or is different to the first time you walked out onto a Broadway stage, the first time you walked into the building knowing you're on tonight, and the first time you walked out in front of that audience and here I am.